We're in the middle of the mitzvah of not eating basar b'chalav, the cooked combination of meat and milk. Midinei ha-mitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah are as follows. Mashamar zichronam levracha, shein iser basar b'chalav min ha-torah, ela bivsar behema tehora, avalo bivhema temea, velo b'chaya afilo tehora. That the only prohibition of meat and milk on a daraisa level is, it has to be a domesticated animal, such as a goat, a sheep, or a cow. And it cannot be a domesticated, non-kosher animal, such as a pig. And not a wild animal, even if the wild animal is kosher, such as a deer. Velo be'ov bein tahor bein tamei. And it does not apply to fowl, whether kosher or not kosher, kosher such as a chicken, and not kosher such as a turkey. Just kidding. That was a joke. Turkey is a machlokes, but lemaisa, we think we hold that turkey is kosher. Not kosher birds such as an ostrich or a raven, something like that. V'nis mechuba b'zeh b'mashakasu sholosh v'amim b'torah gidi shehu lashon mechudash. And the sages rely when they say such a thing. They say that since it says gedi three times in the Torah, the lashon of gedi, shayal alichto basar. It says don't eat meat and milk. Why does it say don't eat a kid in its mother's milk? So since gedi velo chaya, so you darshan it twice. Gedi velo chaya means a goat kid and not a wild animal. But gedi could also refer. It usually refers to a goat kid, but the Gemara brings proofs that gedi could also refer to other types of domesticated animals.
Kosher
domesticated animals. Gedi v'lo of, and it's a kid and not a bird. V'tikach amru zichronim livracha, ki shloshe eile mutar levashlam b'chalav u'mutarim b'hana. So these three, that midel raisa, are not applicable to the prohibition of basar b'chalav at all, so you're allowed to cook them with milk, should you choose to do so. And you should, are allowed to derive benefit from a cooked mixture of a fowl flesh and milk or a wild animal flesh and milk.
You're allowed?
Yeah, you're allowed to cook it, not eat it.
So you can have dog food.
Yeah.
That's like chicken.
You can have dog food that's chicken and milk. That's correct, yeah. Because it's the only isurim derabanan, the only rabbinical prohibitions about basar b'chalav are regarding eating. There are no rabbinical prohibitions about basar b'chalav as regards cooking or deriving benefit. So it stays with the din d'oraisa, which is a domesticated animal and kosher domesticated animal.
What about the pots?
The pots would not be kosher if you cook it together.
I can't understand why they would even say that. Why would you cook anything?
You could have a pot food that's devoted to dog food.
Dog food.
But isn't the issur though?
Well, it matters for us.
But the chachamim were mamided on the din daraisa that you're only not allowed to mid daraisa. The only thing you're the basar b'chalav is only shayach at all, even to eating, to a kosher animal cooked in milk.
Right.
So even for eating, so certainly to cooking or for deriving benefit. So the Chazal added extra prohibitions as regards eating was concerned for a wild animal and for a bird, and if it even for the meat and milk together, even if it's not cooked together, but they did not impose any additional restrictions regarding cooking or deriving benefit.
For a wild animal.
Even for a wild animal, yeah. Aval ba'achila asarum zichronim livracha ligader basar behema sh'asur dvar Torah. So they still were not allowed to actually eat the combination of even poultry or wild animal meat and milk, because as an extra, it's a fence around the prohibition, because you might get confused. K'dei shalo yischalif livnei adam basar b'basar, because people get confused. Different types of meat, they're not going to be so careful to distinguish all the different types of meat, so therefore, anything that requires shchita, anything that you need to slaughter, is now you're not allowed to cook in milk, and not even, it's an extra prohibition, that even, the Mishnah says that you're not even allowed to bring meat and milk to the table at the same time. So even even poultry are not allowed to bring it to the table at the same time as milk. Like Gemara has a discussion over there about whether that's a gzera l'gzera. That's two levels of rabbinic prohibition. That the Torah prohibition is even if it's only if it's cooked together, and it doesn't apply to poultry at all. So it's enough to aser one of them. You shouldn't aser two levels of rabbinic prohibition, that you're not allowed to eat the two together, and then you're not allowed to even bring the two to the table together, lest you come to eat it. Gemara says, the conclusion is that's not exer. Yeah?
A minhag in certain circles, you know, not to have fish and milk? I think I've seen that, like a thing about a you know, bris, where you know you have you know, bagels and lox with no cream cheese or something like that. You know,
so. Yeah, people. I mean, the Beis Yosef brings an opinion that you're not allowed to, just like you're not allowed, like the Gemara says that if you roast meat and fish together, so it's a sakana, so it could cause health problems. So it's a quite, people have extended that nowadays, that you're not, we don't eat the fish and the meat together at all. We don't
use the same
pot. You don't use the same pot?
Yes. Hmm?
You don't use the same pot?
Oh. I know people who
you
don't.
Mean a fish?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I read that in a book somewhere. I read that in a book once, like a practical kashrus guide. Yesh mehadrim, there are people who are mahadar to have two sets of pots, for one for meat and one for fish. I was like,
why do you sound like a filter fish pot?
But that's,
no,
that's for practical reasons.
You said that for Pesach this past year. Remember, Adina sent you that query, and it was crazy. They did say that. They said, if you have a grill,
a grill, right.
And so they said, if it's fish, you know.
No, but that's probably because they're afraid that the
that's probably
fish,
there's actually
the
residue
fish
there.
Is going to get a little bit fleshy from the crap on the grill. But if you're eating the fish,
it was a very surprising thing on the website.
Yeah, okay. I don't know if I even go that far.
This is where I say, I didn't grow up with this stuff.
Okay, but there, apparently there are some people who have separate pots and pans for fish and meat. Mm-hmm. I personally don't know anyone. Right. Rav Schechter holds the Magen Avraham says that since the Gemara says the only problem is because of sakana, that's dangerous for health, and nowadays we know that there's no health problem whatsoever with having been, I mean, meat and fish. You can even roast meat and fish together, so it's, let alone just eat, use the same fork, so then you don't have to be careful at all. So there are people who go like that, but the common practice is that we still try to make a separation between meat and fish.
But fish and milk is just...
Fish and milk, some say it's actually the wrong girsa, but the Beis Yosef does bring some shita that you're not, that meat and that fish and milk together is also sakana, just like fish and meat. So some Sfardim, Ashkenazim are not makbid on this at all, but some Sfardim, since they take whatever the Beis Yosef says very literally and very carefully, so they will not eat fish and milk together. That's why it's difficult also, because the Gemara only talks about roasting meat and fish together. So it goes so far as you can't have bagels, lox, and cream cheese. That's a little bit overextending it. So some people do have that. Some people do have that minhag, but for among Ashkenazim, it's pretty much unheard of. So people get confused between different kinds of meats. So they're being as machmir about chaya, wild animal meat, and poultry, as much as they were about regular domesticated animal, which is the real biblical prohibition. Like I said, you're not allowed to bring poultry and milk on the table together at all. The Mishnah says this only has to do with the table upon which you eat, but the countertop in the kitchen that you cook on, then you're allowed to have meat and milk on it at the same time. Right, the Gemara says you just need a heker, that it just, even if you have two people, if they're eating on two separate tablecloths, or they put something in the middle that's a clear distinction, so they should remember not to take from each other's food, then you're allowed to, it just means if there's, you know, everybody's eating together at a table. There's a common table. You can't have meat and milk on the table at the same time. Rabbi Yossi HaGalili was one of the Tanaim, and he didn't hold from this gzera. He held that it was unnecessary to make this additional restriction that poultry you couldn't eat with milk. So he paskin practically that you could eat poultry with milk. The Gemara says b'mekomo shel Rabbi Yossi HaGalili. That shows the importance of a mara d'asra. You have to have one rabbi who's in charge of the locale. Nowadays, we don't really have that. We have different shuls. We have tons of, everybody has their own thing that they do. But in the olden days, you had a Rav von Stutt. You had a rabbi who was in charge of the town, of the location. So in Rabbi Yosef Galili's town, before all the Chachamim got together and took a vote on this and decided that for all the Jewish people, they're going to make the rule. No, it's not resuscitatable. That opinion is not resuscitatable. But in those times, before there was a clear, absolute ruling that all the sages got together and voted on it, then in the place of Rabbi Yosef HaGalili, they had every right to follow his personal shittas, and he felt this was too far, and it was unnecessary to make the gzeira about chicken and milk, so they used to actually chicken and milk. Ulfi das ksas min hamefarshim, chayvu gam bahem gam ken shia bein achilasam l'achilas, shihi, I'm sorry, bein achilasam l'achilas hagvina. So according to some opinions, it says interesting, not all opinions, that you have to wait between chicken, between poultry, and eating cheese afterwards. Kmo beikar hisser, just like with behema, with domesticated animal meat, dahinu basar behema. So that's because the way we paskin really is that all the types of meat are the same regarding waiting also, whether it's poultry or whether it's non-domesticated animal or whether it's domesticated animal, that the Gemara tells us that Marukva said that I'm like the vinegar, the vinegar derived from wine regarding my father. It's in Hebrew, the expression is Chala bar chamra. So it means literally the vinegar, the son of wine. But we would call it wine vinegar. So he said, because he wanted to apply the expressions regarding him and his father. He says, my father, when he would eat meat, he would wait 24 hours before eating dairy, before eating cheese. But I am not so religious. I won't eat meat and milk in the same meal, even if I don't eat them together. But I will, if I eat meat, I will eat milk at the next meal. So there's a big machlokes rishonim as to what exactly this means. According to many Ashkenazi rishonim and Tosfos and things like that, so really it means literally that. So we assume that Marukva is saying that he goes according to the basic halacha, that his father was more stringent than was actually required by halacha, and that was a praiseworthy thing, but he wasn't on that level, so he goes according to the basic halacha. You could argue perhaps that he was also stringent on himself, that maybe he went farther than basic halacha. But we assume that Marukva is representative of the basic halacha. So Tosfos, the many Ashkenazi Rishonim, state that what he means is literally, he wouldn't eat, if he ate meat in one meal, so he wouldn't eat milk in the same meal, he would, you know, he would bench or wash his mouth or something like that. And then immediately, as soon as he finished benching, if he wasn't holding in the meat meal anymore, then he would already eat cheese. And that is the formal Ashkenazi psak, although we don't really act that way anymore, which we'll see in a second. Then there's the other opinion, which is more characteristic of the Sephardi Rishonim, of the Rambam, for example, that he holds what he means is, it's not minakotze lakotze. It's not from one extreme to the other. It's not saying his father waited 24 hours and I'll wait 2 seconds as long as I bench. It means his father waited 24 hours, but he waited the amount of time that normally elapses between one meal and another. Right. So since you eat one meal in the morning, one meal in the afternoon, there are approximately 6 hours in between. So that's why the Rambam holds that if you eat meat, then you cannot eat milk again for another 6 hours.
It's interesting, actually, it's claimed that the German minhag is 3 hours,
right.
The Dutch minhag is 1 hour,
right.
Which may reflect the comparative abundance of food, and, you know, the Germans ate better than the East Europeans did, and the Dutch, of course, are famous for eating very well, so... they would have eat more often.
Yeah. I always heard the pshat in the Yekesh Minag that they wait 3 hours is because in the winter, when there's less time between the morning and the evening, so the sudas were closer together. So that was the minimum time that ever elapsed between two meals, and that's why you had 3 hours.
I don't know, people have said that 3 hour thing is completely made up. I mean, the 1 hour has a basis and 6 hours has a basis, but 3 hours...
But what do you mean made up? Like I said, Ashkenazim really paskin that it goes according to the meal, that you're allowed, if you eat meat, then you're allowed to eat milk as soon as you finish your meal. But nobody has that custom anymore, so everything is dependent on custom. Mm-hmm. So the Dutch wait 1 hour,
Beseder. But I meant, what's the earliest source, let's say, that says
I don't know
hours.
Of an earliest explicit written source that says 3 hours. The Rama says that although... We really paskin, Ashkenazi paskin, we should keep less time. Really, it's proper to be stringent and keep 6 hours, which is why in Eastern Europe, so everybody pretty much, the later poskim write that, for the Eastern European poskim write that in their times, the minhag was completely widespread that Ashkenazim and Eastern Europe kept 6 hours also. So, I mean, anything, the Dutch also, the Zohar says, by the way, I think that you can't eat meat and milk within the same hour. That's why some people wait half an hour. I never quite got that, but some people wait half an hour even if they eat milk, to then eat meat. That's al pi kabbalah. So some bring a source for this for the Dutch custom as well, that they wait an hour between even meat and then eating milk. But the 3 hours, I mean, again, it's all customary. If that's the custom, so fine. Because Ashkenazim really paskin that certainly that's good.
But why is it that when you have milk first and then meat, this doesn't apply?
Because milk doesn't sit in your mouth as much. Like meat gets stuck in your teeth. It depends. There's a difference of opinion between the Rishonim exactly why you have to wait between having meat until having milk. Some say it's because the Rambam says that's because there's still some meat that's still stuck in your teeth. Others say it's because of the just that it's greasier and the taste stays in your mouth longer. Differences of opinion. So some point out that maybe according to the Rambam that it's because of the meat between the teeth. So nowadays that we have floss and toothbrushes, so maybe according to the Rambam, you shouldn't need, if you brush and floss your teeth well, so you shouldn't have to wait 6 hours when you have meat before you have milk. We don't really normally accept that. Yeah, milk can be. Milk is not as.
But cheese.
Except for hard cheese.
But that's the idea with hard cheese,
right? Right, right. I'll get to the hard cheese in one second. I just wanted to comment also that the Rambam's Lashon, when he describes the waiting period between meat and then milk, so he says that the time between the morning meal and the afternoon meal is approximately 6 hours. Kimoshe shows. Mm-hmm. So some people, I mean, we don't have to go exactly according to the Rambam, some people are very makbid that it has to be 6 hours to the minute. Some people say
in the sixth hour.
Some people say, yeah, some people are knowing into the sixth hour, but that even a little bit more than five is okay. Most of them like that, but I say, like, we Ashkenazim, so all these are Menhagim anyway. We don't think this is Maker Adin anyway. We go with the last year, so who cares if you have whoever a different Minhag. But the simple understanding of the Rambam is not that you just have to wait a tiny bit more than five. It's just, you don't have to look at your watch to the second to see when you last ate meat. You just have to think, oh, was it approximately 6 hours ago that I ate meat? Okay, so then you can go ahead and eat milk.
When were watches invented?
Much later. Yeah, much later.
They couldn't have been.
Right, Nachinami, but we don't have to either. Even though we have watches, we still don't have to go according to the second. It also goes, by the way, when you finish eating the meat, not when you finish your meal. So even if you stop eating meat, then you Shabbos lunch, then it goes hours and hours more into the afternoon with dessert and tea and schmoozing and whatever, and you don't bench until 5 o'clock, and it's almost time for mincha. You can still eat pizza for Malava Malka because it's still been 6 hours since you ate the meat. Regarding waiting before, so the Gemara says that you don't have to wait after eating milk or cheese until before eating meat because the milk is much more easily digestible in your mouth. So the minhag developed later, really, that since hard cheese, aged cheese, has a very, very strong taste and the taste really stays in your mouth, so therefore they felt that the hard cheese does not apply to this rule, and you should wait 6 hours. You should wait the same amount after eating hard cheese before you eat meat. But this is not, seemingly, this is not Medina de Gemara. This is not a Talmudic law. And it's just a later custom because we see that the taste really does stay in your mouth. There's actually one posek, I believe it was the Maharshal, if I'm not mistaken, who writes that if you wait 6 hours after eating hard cheese before eating meat, then you're an apikoros. Because the Gemara says, if you achal gvina, if you eat cheese, then you don't have to wait before eating meat. So who said? Well, what do you mean? Now you're coming up with your own rules about hard, not hard. The Gemara says explicitly, you don't listen to the Gemara, you're an apikoros. But we don't go like that. We assume that hard cheese is, you do have to wait 6 hours. That's the contemporary practice. What I would, some are makel, though, if the hard cheese is melted, for example, if you have aged Parmesan cheese that's melted into a pizza or a lasagna, and you're not just taking the block of cheese, the Parmesan, and, chomping into it, then they're lenient on that. So I think that's appropriate to be lenient on that, because My approach is that since it does not seem to be according to the basic Talmudic law that it's a problem, it's just a minhag, so it should be as lenient as possible. If you're not mamish biting into the cheese directly, if it's melted in, or there's any other reason to be lenient, or there's any suffix, there's any doubt as to whether this particular type of cheese is falls into the category of hard cheese or not, so then it's proper to be lenient on that. Aval bevsar dogim b'chagovim lo gadru b'hem klal. If you eat fish or you eat grasshoppers, then you do not have to wait at all between, you're allowed to cook them, you're allowed to eat them, you're allowed to cook them in milk, whatever. No problem at all. Because they don't have shchita, so you don't get confused between them and meat because there's no similarity whatsoever. Among the differences that they don't have shchita, but it's a completely different texture, completely different mahos. Shein b'sarim doma kol b'sarim b'hema v'lo v'lo b'nei adam litos b'zeh. You won't make a mistake regarding those. There's another stringency that Chazal imposed about Basar B'cholov that's, according to many commentators at least, is different from other Isurim. There, we'll see in a second that there are Rishonim who hold that this is not a difference between Basar B'cholov and other Isurim, that they all have this stringency to them. So So let's say you have a steak, and it got a little bit, you were cooking the steak, and a drop of milk fell into the steak, and there is not 60 times, the steak is not 60 times bigger than the drop of milk, so what are you going to tell me? Is a steak mutter or usser? Mutter. If it's not 60 times. If the steak is usser, because there's not 60 times the volume of steak as there was more than there was the milk. So anu roam shneim kachasichas isser. So in that case, you view the steak itself as if it became a prohibited item. It's not that it's a permitted thing that absorbed some, that absorbed another food that caused it to become, the combination is usser. You view the steak now as a prohibited entity. Now let's say you take this steak, and besides the pan being treif, let's say you use this steak and now you put it into your cholent. So now you need 60 times the volume of cholent more than the steak. Not against the little drop of milk that originally fell onto the steak. Now the whole steak is viewed as a new prohibited item. V'zehu she'amram zichrona levracha chasicha atzma nasas nevela. That's the call that the block of meat itself, the piece of meat, became a prohibited item. Nevela, yeah. V'atam ibnei she'tarovta mosartam. It's the very fact, they're both independently permissible things, but when the milk and the meat combine, they become a new prohibited entity. Once they become joined together, they become as if it's a hunk of non-kosher meat, and you have to treat it accordingly. So this is a problem also for this would come up more if, let's say, you were cooking a cholent and there was a piece of meat sitting on top of the cholent, not inside the liquid, but there was a piece of meat sitting on top, and then you had your a cup of milk, and you were drinking it while you're stirring, while you're checking the cholent, and whoops, oy, the drop of milk that fell on a piece of meat that was sitting outside the cholent, that was sitting on top, not within the whole cholent, but then you have to go, and the piece of meat sits together with the milk for a little bit, then that piece of meat becomes usser, and you need to measure it, see if you had the cholent, it's 60 times the piece of meat. Not 60 times a drop of milk. Okay. However, but the saving grace is if you stir the pot immediately, if the drop falls, and immediately you stir the whole cholent together to make sure that that piece of meat is sitting, is it going to be combined with all the liquid so that the milk doesn't get absorbed into that one piece of meat by itself, then that would be permissible. You would measure 60 times a drop of milk and not 60 times the piece of meat. Okay, uvishari surim ain't okay, but that's not the case if, for example, you're cooking your cholent, there's a piece of meat sitting on top, and you have your housekeeper has a piece of pork fat that she's munching on, and the piece of pork fat falls onto this piece of meat, and there's not 60 times on the piece of meat against the pork fat, and that then this whole piece of meat will not become. Even though it will become usher, not allowed to eat this piece of meat because there's not 60 times the pork fat that was absorbed into it. Now, let's say you, after the meat, a piece of meat absorbed the pork fat, you stirred it into your cholent. You'd measure against the entire cholent and not against the piece of pork fat. You'd have the 60 times of the cholent against the pork fat and not against the piece of meat that absorbed the pork fat. Not the same as with milk. Different. According to the chinuch, it's different. If it's milk, then the piece of meat becomes intrinsically prohibited, and now you need 60 times the piece of meat in the cholent to be mevatalet. Okay. But if a little bit of pork fat was absorbed into a piece of meat, then let's say later after the piece of meat absorbed the pork fat, it was stirred into the cholent, you're good as long as you have 60 times the pork fat in the cholent. Right. I'm not talking quickly stirring. Oh. Yeah.
This is sort of counterintuitive, though. I mean, after all, a lovely little bit of, Chol Yisrael milk, comes in and falls on your glot kosher, Beis Yosef steak, and that, if you're going to, all of a sudden, that's much more terrible than...
Because it's an Isser Mechudash. Yeah, it's a new thing. Mm-hmm. It creates, and just the Tarovis creates a new Isser. That's why, yeah. Okay, but the Sefer HaChinuch holds that Bashari Isser Meino Kain. However, this is a Machlokas Rishonim. This is the famous as the Shita of Rabbeinu Ephraim, who holds that the principle of Chasicha Nasis Nevela that the entire piece of meat now becomes a new prohibited entity is only regarding meat and milk. But regarding other types of prohibitions, this principle does not apply. However, we don't go like this. Some different Rishonim, many Rishonim, that's the Ashkenazi Minag, that we don't go according to this. And we hold that Chasicha Nasis Nevela Bishari Surim also. So we hold that if a drop of a piece of meat absorbed pork fat and became usher because there wasn't 60 times the pork fat, then if you put that into a chilim, then you still need 60 times the piece of meat. That's the way we hold practically.
So making no distinction.
Right, we make no distinction.
That seems more
correct. But Sfardim go Lamaisa in accordance with the opinion of Rabbeinu Ephraim. That's the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins. So they hold that they only hold of Chasicha Nasas Nevela by Basar B'Cholov and not by Shari
Zerim. So does that mean you have to be more careful eating by a Sephardi? Because to them it's kosher, to us it's not. So like in a restaurant or something, do you have to be more careful?
A Hechsher, a Sephardi Hechsher is not going to give a Hechsher to something that's shouldn't anyway.
Okay.
I mean, it's a public thing. Should not give a Hechsher to something that's Mamish Asur from Ashkenazim.
But like for someone's house?
I mean, maybe they should, maybe they could, but I'm saying they won't as a matter of practical policy to make sure Ashkenazim eat there as well, yeah.
I'm saying, like, practically speaking, if I'm going to an Ashkenazim...
No, if you're going to someone's...
house, do I need to be, like, worried that, oh, some of their food is not kosher for me because we hold different kosher standards?
I mean, if they know that they matured something based on this principle of Chasicha Nasas Nevela was only for Basar B'Cholov, then they shouldn't feed it to you, but you don't have to be concerned if you stop go eat a Sephardi's house. You don't have to be concerned that a piece of pork fat fell on the... I mean, it's so unlikely to happen. You certainly don't have to be concerned if you go into somebody's house. But again, they should tell you if something happened that would make it permissible for them and not permissible for you. So, according to the opinion of Rabbeinu Ephraim, that Chazicha Nases Nevela is only by Basar B'Cholov, then if you have your piece of meat on the cholent that absorbs some pork fat and then got mixed in with the cholent, so the piece of meat itself, it counts towards the 60 times to be mevatel the pork fat. The chatira itself did not become rendered a new prohibited object, but rather is just considered to be prohibited due to the fact that it absorbed something that was not that was prohibited. Some people say that if you can still tell, if you mix the piece of meat that absorbed the pork fat into the cholin and you had 60 times, even including that piece of meat, to be mevatel the piece of pork fat that was absorbed into the piece of meat, but still, if you could tell which piece of meat had absorbed the pork fat, then you should take that piece out and set it aside, if you could tell. Other post-gim hold that you don't need to do that. The Torah disagrees, right? The Torah disagrees. The Torah holds that once you stirred that piece of meat that absorbed the pork fat into the mixture, then it spits out the pork fat. I mean, logically, that makes sense, right? That if you spit all the stuff, now it gets mixed into the pot. Everything is mixed all together, so it no longer is considered to have absorbed the pork fat by itself. It gets spit out by the piece of meat, and it gets mixed into the entire pot, so it's okay. The sages say if you burn basar b'chalav like you're supposed to, it's prohibited. Something is forbidden to derive any benefit from it, then you're not allowed, then you burn it like you're supposed to, so then you have to bury the ashes. You're not allowed to derive benefit from the ashes to make soap or something. Shetun in kvura, they have to be buried. The Amru Gamkein Shalos Ratora Basar Becholov Ella Becholov Shal Behema Chaya. The Torah did not Asr Basar Becholov, only Asr Basar Becholov of a live animal. Aval Becholov Mesa Eino Nesar. The animal died, and let's say you find after it died, you could still squeeze a little bit out of the udders, then that's not Midarai Sasar. Still Asr Midarabana. Fika Hakhal Mutter Minatora Becholov. So Minatora, you're allowed to take the udder of the cow, and you're allowed to cook it the way it is, even containing all the milk that was in the animal when it died. Yeah. And it's not a problem of basar b'chol. That's midaraisa. El shechachomim asaru legeder ad shiemarik chelo mena. Midarabanan, that's not, if you want to cook the udder, then there's a whole procedure you have to perform. It's described in the poskim that you have to rip it in both directions and dry it and make sure that all the milk that was in it is off it. Ela shechachom imasaru olegeder. Sorry, kimoshin is bar b'mekoma. Right, says in Maseches Chulin. V'chalav hanimtza bekevas habehema yesh bo shnei hateren. But if you cook in the if you shech the animal and you find, let's say it's a baby animal that was nursing, if you want some veal, then veal has its own problems because they feed it basar b'cholav. The feed that they give the veal is basar b'cholav deraisa. Besides the tzar balei chayim issues that they keep it in not ideal conditions, to say the least. And there may some poskim were concerned there might be more treifas because of the conditions that they keep the calves in. But another problem that's been raised nowadays is they actually feed the calves exclusively on a mixture of basar b'cholav that's actually meat cooked together with milk. So the question,
it would be good.
Yeah. But the fact that they raise it exclusively on something that's asar b'hana could create issues. So. This is one of Rav Schechter's things, like the milk in general. But here, Rav Schechter also feels that veal is not is actually all veal nowadays is not is forbidden because of this reason. But the Maisa, all the Hechsherim give a Hechsher on it, Kemad, because they were like, it's a little machlokas between the Gra and the Shach, and it's a complicated. So it was written about in the RJJ journal a while ago. But back to the baby animal who's been nursing. So you if you Schecht it and you open the stomach and you find milk inside the stomach. Then there are two reasons to be matir. Echad shu b'chol cholav shel mesa. So midaraisa, it's for sure not usher because it's a certainly no better, no worse rather than it's no worse than the actual milk that was found in the udders after the animal died. It's worse. It's and oh, sheinu ela kefirish b'alma. It's already digested. It's just like waste products. Shekvar nisakel sham. So you're allowed to eat the milk that is found in the stomach of the animal. Even if it's somewhat coagulated, then it's permissible. Because that's mamish like a waste product. The Geonim said that even if it's clear milk, that's perfectly drinkable milk, that's found in the stomach of the animal, then you're still allowed to drink it. Now Rabbeinu Tam disagrees. Rabbeinu Tam holds that if it's clear, you're not allowed to drink it. But they go in them, as it said, disagree. And they say you're allowed to drink it even if it's clear. The main usage for this is not for drinking per se, but for making cheese. So since, really, it's just fine to make cheese with this, because as we said, it's mutter. It's even if the animal is not kosher, it hasn't been shechted, since the milk that's found in the stomach of the animal contains rennet because of the stomach enzymes that were absorbed into it, you can use the milk that was found in the stomach of the animal to make cheese, whether the animal was shechted or wasn't shechted, it's treif, it died by itself, it doesn't matter, it's completely kosher.
Is that
No. The question is, the gzeira of cheese, really, according to most, the way we normally assume, is that the gzeira against goyish cheeses is because they didn't use the keva itself, the milk that was found in the stomach to curdle the cheese, which would be fine, but because they actually took flesh from the stomach of the dead animal, and they used that to curdle the cheese because that also obviously contains the enzymes that were required to make for cheese making. So that is a problem because that's nevela. That's goyish ren. It would be a problem of nevela because it's actually derived from the flesh of the stomach. But the Rambam suggests, perhaps implying that there's another opinion as well, but the Rambam says that the way the Geonim ruled, the Geonim said that there was a general gzeira. Cheese is what we call a davar sheminyan. There was a gzeira against any goyish cheeses that were produced by goyim, either without the Jew taking actual part in the cheese-making process or at least watching, difference of opinion about how far that goes. Because, and we know, if there's something that there was a general gzera against, then that's an absolute prohibition. So even if you happen to know that the goy either used the stomach, the milk that was found in the stomach of the animal, or a vegetable source for the rennet to make the cheese, still it's prohibited because it falls under the general gzera of Chazal. But Rav Soloveitchik dug up the other shita. Since the Rambam implies that there was another shita, that if you know for sure that the goyim used vegetable rennet or an absolutely kosher source to make their cheese. If you know for absolutely sure, then that's there was never a general gzeira about it, then you're allowed to eat that cheese. But that's very much not the accepted opinion at all.
Wait, but isn't the way the Gemara talks about it, doesn't it say it's specifically about watching? I thought it didn't allow for hazy.
You mean that's for milk? For milk, watching is certainly sufficient.
Cheese
is but for cheese, the shach, it's a machlokes between the shach and the ramah. The Rambam in Perusha Mishnayah says that watching is okay, but the Ramah, and the Ramah also says just watching the goyim make the cheese is okay, but the Shach feels that that's not correct, that the Jew actually has to take part in the cheese making process. The Gemara doesn't address it explicitly. But that, again, like I said, that's not the later poskim all assume that for sure that the cheese is what we call a davar sheba minyan, that it's an absolute rabbinic prohibition. And even if you know for sure that the cheese contains only kosher ingredients, then it's still prohibited. Which is most poskim assume that milk is the same way also, that even if you know that the milk is kosher, then you still can't eat it unless the Jew actually washes them. But there are poskim such as the Radbaz, the Pri Chadash, who say that as opposed to cheese, which is a davar sheba minyan, an absolute prohibition, they say that the milk is not an absolute prohibition. And if you know for sure, if nobody in the area would ever think of milking a non-kosher animal, then it's okay to drink the milk in that place. Rav Moshe Weinstein says that in America, where we have government supervision of the milk, it's even better. Because you don't even have to rely on this. Even if you assume that milk is a davar sheba minyan, absolute rabbinic prohibition, the fact that there's government supervision and we know that the goyim would be afraid to mix in any non-kosher milk, that's considered the equivalent to the Jew actually watching the milk. The Gemara says that even if the Jew doesn't physically watch the milking, but he's just sitting on the side of the flock of cows or goats or sheep or whatever that the goy is milking, then that's sufficient, because the goy is going to be afraid that the Jew at any time is going to stand up and look over the fence and see him milking a non-kosher animal. So Rav Moshe Weinstein felt that the government supervision was considered to be the equivalent of this, because it engenders the same feeling in the goyim. Others poskim disagreed very strongly with Rav Moshe Weinstein. They felt that since it's a davar sheba minyan, absolute prohibition, so it needs to fall into the exact parameters of what Chazal set forth. So it actually, the feeling of fear on the part of the goy that he's going to milk a non-kosher animal has to be engendered by a Jew and not engendered by the government. I mean, Rav Breuer was makbid on Chol of Yisrael, definitely.
What?
I saw a tshuva about his, by handwritten.
I don't think there was even
Chol of Yisrael. No, KJ was one of the pioneers of Chol of Yisrael in America, definitely. Rav Breuer insisted that he did not hold the Rav Moshe Feinstein's cool on this, and he insisted that milk had to be Chol of Yisrael. He was lenient about cheese.
Right.
Because cheese, we have another reason that even the Rama says that if the Jew only supervised the cheese making and didn't watch the milk coming all the way prior from when it was milked, since milk, that non-kosher milk cannot be used to make cheese, so if it never got into the Jew's, if the Jew never owned the milk, in other words, never, Jews not allowed to buy the milk from the goyim and use it to make cheese, even though non-kosher milk cannot be used to make cheese, but if it was in the goy's position the whole time, so it never became usser, the Jew never bought it as a milk product per se, so that if the Jew just watched the milking, then it's sufficient. So
the
cheese making, right. So that's the Rama says. That was the traditional accepted psak, that if as long as the Jews, I mean, obviously there were always people who were stringent, that even for cheese making had to be watched from the very beginning. There were many... they're posting more stringent about that. That also, there are always people who were in communities that were stringent about that. But Rabbi said, you know, I'm not arguing with the Rama. The Rama says that it's okay if the Jew doesn't watch the milking, the cheese making process all the way from the milking. It's sufficient that they just watch the cheese making process. So that's why KJ, in theory, although there's no currently no cheese.
Well, they had two brands. They had
right.
Olam and they had
Migdal.
Migdal, right.
There's currently no dairy product under KJ supervision that is not completely Chol of Yisrael from the beginning. But in theory, KJ Kashrus would give a hechsher to cheese that was only supervised from the cheese making and not all the way back to the milk. That's already the Ramah says. And certainly, if you hold of Rav Moshe Feinstein also, and even if you don't hold of him to the extent that you'd be willing to drink straight milk based on that, still, it's another reason to be lenient about only watching the cheese making and not watching the milk that was used for the cheese making all the way from the beginning.
What are you looking for in the cheese making? Why are you watching?
You watch to make sure they didn't put any non-kosher ingredients in the cheese.
Oh, the rennet.
Yeah, the rennet.
But again, we normally hold that that's not sufficient. We normally are machmir for the shach, that the Jew has to actually take part in the cheese making. In other words, that they have to pour in the rennet into the milk that starts the curdling process of making the cheese. Though all the hashgachos nowadays are machmir for that, as far as I'm aware.
And the other brand?
One of them was, yeah.
Migdal was not Chol of Yisrael.
From Chol of Yisrael milk, yeah, right.
Yeah. But they stopped giving a hechsher to Migdal because of the treifus in the cows, because there's a problem with herds of cows That's why KJ, you will not currently find any dairy products that's not Chalav Yisrael from the beginning with a KJ Hechsher, because there was a problem that with certain vaccinations or procedures that were done on the cows, they were puncturing internal organs that potentially could render the cow a trefa, and in non-Chalav Yisrael flocks, they were not careful about this. So since there's a potential that the milk would be derived from a treif animal, so then they will not give hechsher.
How can the animal be treif if it's still alive?
No, a lot of animals are treif when they're still alive. The treif just means it's on its way. It's on its way to the grave. It doesn't mean that it's a treifa. Has an internal defect.
Still alive. You
have a small hole in the lung. The animal can live perfectly well with a little hole in the lung. You know, but that's treifa though.
Right.
But you don't check every cow.
That's right. We discussed right.
Yeah.
To see
you don't need to check every cow, but here you know that they did a procedure on the cow that could very well render it a trefa. Anyways, that's one of the problems nowadays. Any case, that's the reason why some hechsherim, even if they in theory give hechsher to milk that was derived from non-Chalav Yisrael sources for cheese making, then they might not give it nowadays because there's this problem of the trefas in non-Chalav Yisrael flocks. The OU, the hechsherim, obviously not concerned about that. But again, that's only for cheese. That's for cheese that's actually made with rennet, hard, real cheeses. Not hard cheese necessarily for the sense that you have to wait after it, but for real cheeses. But things like yogurt, cottage cheese, things like that, even according to the lenient opinions about cheese, you would need full Chalav Yisrael. If you didn't accept Rav Moshe Weinstein, you'd need Chalav Yisrael for things like that. Cottage cheese is also a problem because cottage cheese is a machlokas between... The OU holds that cottage cheese is not really considered cheese because they don't use rennet to make it. So therefore, they're lenient. They don't actually have a Jew take part in the cheese making process. Maybe not even watching. I'm not sure about that because they hold that it's just like a milk product. It's not really cheese, so they don't need that. Other poskim hold that that's absolute, and cream cheese also. That they hold that it's not really cheese, so therefore they could be lenient about that. But other poskim say no. Those are also cheese. You need a Jew to take part in the cheese making process. So some people will only buy Chalav Yisrael, even if they technically would accept the Rav Moshe Weinstein, only buy Chalav Yisrael cream cheese and cottage cheese because it might be cheese. Mm-hmm. And the OU is lenient on that. It's funny because there's a posek who's known for being lenient on just about everything, but he holds very stark that cream cheese and cottage cheese are considered cheese. So if you'll go, he has a whole list of tshuvas, his answers to the various questions, or his family's answers to various questions. Mutter, 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 and says, are we allowed to eat OU cream cheese and cottage cheese? Isur gamur! Hamavashel shlil b'cholov chayav. If you cook a fetus in milk, then you're chayav, because fetus is considered to be completely meat. If you eat fetus that's cooked in milk, then you're a chayav. But if you cook the placenta or skin or sinews or bones or the hooves or whatever, things like that, or horns, if you cook that, then you're potter, but you're not allowed to do it lechatchila. You're not allowed to, but you're exempt from punishment should you do it. Yes, they're prate mitzvah. By the way, if they cook bones, dry bones in, this is when I talked about gelatin. Remember in my when we had the kiddush, when I talked about gelatin. So if it's a kosher shechted animal and everything, and so if you do cook the bone, a dry bone without meat on it, in water, and you make gelatin, so that's actually par because there's still not enough meat taste to create basar b'chalav if you would cook it with milk afterwards. Yes, they're prate mitzvah. Whereas the details of the Perek Shemini Michulin, the eighth Perek of Chulin is called Kol HaBasar Asur Lavashel B'Cholav, any meat is forbidden to cook in milk, one of the most famous Prakim in Chulin. But in Hegez B'Chol Makom V'Chol Zman B'Zchar Munikevos, all plays in all times, male and female. V'Ovir Aleah V'Ochal Kezayis Min HaBasar, you eat olive's bulk of the meat, V'Cholav Shnis Bashel Yachad, so if you, the two combine to a Kezayis, then you receive the penalty of lashes, Mezid Lokev Al Nanebo, but if you derive benefit from it, like you sell it or you give it away as a present, then you don't receive the penalty of lashes. Because it's possible to get hanah out of it without doing an action. We know we have a principle that any negative commandment that has no action associated with it, you do not receive the penalty of lashes off. So even if you take the basar b'chala and you anoint it and smear it on your body as a lotion, then you're certainly directly deriving benefit from it in a very active way. It's possible, he says. He's not machlet. He doesn't say definitively that you still don't receive lashes because it's not the normal way that you would derive benefit from basar b'chalav using it as a lotion. Sheino asoy lasuch, basar b'chalav is not made to be a lotion. V'yislodun bo, gamkein shilke, he says, maybe, I'm not exactly sure, it's possible that you might receive the penalty of lashes for that.